Well, hello there. I'm Richard Serrett, and this is Coast to Coast AM, and tonight, this morning, we are coming to you live from Coast Toronto affiliate Talk Radio AM 640. Let me give a little plug for my beloved Toronto. We're a pretty conservative town in many ways. We are the fourth largest market in North America, and this is interesting. It is quite possibly the most culturally diverse city on the planet. When you ride the subway in the morning here, you're likely to encounter people from every corner of the world. You're likely to hear dozens of foreign languages. But Toronto has a lot of coast-to-coast listeners. This place is a hotbed of paranormal activity by all accounts. For example, not far from where I'm sitting, the Keg Mansion on Jarvis Street is one of the city's most haunted places. Humber College Lakeshore Campus, Queen's Park, the provincial legislature, all among the most haunted locations you'll ever come across. And great fans of conspiracy and ufology also. So it's a real honor and pleasure to be able to sit in on occasion and host Coast to Coast from this wonderful city. And speaking of Toronto, this is home to a pretty fine documentary filmmaker and student of biblical prophecy who came to this city by way of his native Iran. I've gotten to know Ali Siadatan, my guest in the final stages of the program, over the years. And as I say, he was first a guest on my weekly radio program here in Toronto. I got to know him through that. And then later, he was actually my kung fu instructor for a very short while. But a few years ago, he wrote and produced a film called UFOs, Gods, and Angels, in which he chronicles the UFO and alien abduction phenomena from modern times all the way back to the Old Testament. And while examining UFOs and ET visitation through a biblical lens is not always popular, and in fact, it's oftentimes controversial, it's a perspective I think that deserves to be told. Ali Siadatan will be with us. He's hard at work on a new documentary on this subject, and included in this new film is a lengthy and revealing interview with Dr. David Jacobs, who has in many ways assumed the mantle of the late John Mack and Bud Hopkins. You'll hear all about it when documentary filmmaker Ali Siadatan joins me in the final 3 hours of the program. But coming up in the first hour, what is the government still hiding about the JFK assassination? A few weeks back, the National Archives, for the first time ever, released a list of documents related to the assassination of Kennedy that are still shielded from public view. More than five decades after the assassination of President Kennedy, thousands of government files detailing the activities and testimony of shadowy spies, long-deceased witnesses, and others with possible knowledge of the events remain shielded from public view. The government gave a first-ever peek of what's still out there several weeks back as the National Archives released a list of the 3,063 documents that have been fully withheld since JFK's murder in Dallas on November 22, 1963. Coming up, we'll find out whether any of these 3,063 documents may in fact contain a clue or shed some light on who killed Kennedy, and to what extent Oswald was involved. Now, maybe I'm trying a little too hard to connect the dots from JFK in hour one to UFOs and ETs in the latter stages of the program, but it's interesting that during this current presidential election cycle, that Democratic presidential hopeful Hillary Clinton has vowed to get to the bottom of an alleged UFO cover-up within the government. Scott C. Waring, who is editor of UFO Sightings Daily, has posted copies to his website of a letter sent by JFK to the then head of the CIA just 10 days before he was murdered. He wrote, quote, "Presidential candidate Hillary Clinton doesn't know it yet, but she does not have the power to release such information." He goes on to suggest that the CIA might intervene in a most aggressive manner, just like they did with JFK. Yes, just a week before his death, JFK wrote a memo to the CIA to release all pertinent info to NASA But somehow, he was killed before it ever happened. Is it possible that among those 3,063 documents being withheld are certain artifacts, memos, perhaps, related to what JFK may have known about ETs and UFOs? I have my doubts, quite frankly, but I'll put that question to one of the top JFK assassination researchers out there, James D. Eugenio. It was about 55 years ago, President Kennedy delivered a speech before the American Newspaper Publishers Association at New York's Waldorf Astoria Hotel. He said, "The very word secrecy is repugnant in a free and open society. And we are, as a people, inherently and historically opposed to secret societies, to secret oaths and secret proceedings." Amen to that. I'm Richard Serrett, and you're listening to Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back to Coast AM. Richard Serrett with you, coming to Coast from Toronto affiliate AM 640. Jim DiEugenio is the author of Destiny Betrayed, which was about the Garrison investigation of the Kennedy assassination, published in 1992. He is the co-author and editor of the Assassinations Probe magazine on JFK, MLK, RFK, and Malcolm X. He co-edited Pro Magazine from 1993 to 2000, and he was a guest commentator on the anniversary issue of the film JFK, re-released by Warner Brothers several years ago. He lives in Los Angeles and has a master's in contemporary American history from California State University, Northridge. A great pleasure to welcome James DiEugenio back to Coast. How are you, Jim?
Good evening.
All right, let me ask you about the, it seems to me that the National Archives, which has just released a list of these 3,063 documents pertaining to JFK, it seems like they're kind of teasing us here. They're giving us, explain how this works. They're giving a list of what's still being withheld, but they're not really telling us what's in that, what the content of these documents are. Is that correct?
Well, that's partly true and it's partly not true. Let me give your audience a little background to this as to how we even have this list and why you even have it at this time. Okay, I'm sure most of your listeners are old enough to remember the sensation, the international sensation created by Oliver Stone's movie JFK when it was released in 1991 and 1992.
Sure, that was the impetus for a lot of this stuff, these records coming out.
Right. We wouldn't even know this stuff was there if it wasn't for that movie. And let me explain why. See, at the end of the movie, he put a tagline on it saying that the files of the House Select Committee on Assassination are classified until the year 2029. All right? Now, everybody says, well, wait a minute. How come we have to wait 30 years to find out all this stuff about Kennedy's assassination if the government's saying Oswald killed him? All right? And so that humiliated a lot of the congressional leaders that were on the House Select Committee on Assassinations. It created a big ruckus in the media. So they passed a law called the JFK Records Collection Act. And then this created an agency called the Assassination Record Review Board. Now, let me say this about this. This was really a revolutionary committee. Let me explain why. The way researchers in any subject get documents from the government is through something called the Freedom of Information Act, which, if I remember correctly, Kennedy actually passed that act. Okay? There's two problems with the Freedom of Information Act. Okay, number one, it only applies to the executive branch, okay? And number two, the burden of proof is on the guy bringing the lawsuit to show why these records should be declassified.
Isn't there a number three, though, Jim? If they decide that it's an issue of national security, they can say, we can't release that.
No, well, that's in number two. You have to show why the divulgement of the material supersedes any exemption that the government can claim. Okay? All right? So what happened with this JFK Act is, first of all, it applied to both the legislative and the executive branch. So in other words, it applied to the House Select Committee on Assassinations, which is a creation of Congress. And number two, the agency that created the document had to show, in other words, the burden of proof was on them. You prove to us that this is going to endanger either somebody's identity, some secret operation, or national security. Because what happened in this, in with the ARB, they had the document in their hands. In other words, they were looking at the document. So the representative from the FBI or the CIA or the Secret Service, now with this all out in the open, had to defend why they're keeping it a secret. Okay. And by the way, I could tell you a great story about this, because the guy, Jack Thunheim, a lawyer from Minnesota, who was the chief of the ARB, told me this story once. He said, Jim, you should have seen the first meeting. See, these guys had never been treated like this. We had the document up on a big screen in our hearing room, and we all read over the document. And I turned to the guy from the CIA, okay, and I said, what could you possibly want to hide from the American public in that document? And this is exactly what he said to me. He said, I don't know, but give me 2 or 3 minutes and I'll think of something.
I'm sure he would. I'm sure he would.
Well, they have 50 years of experience, okay? They can make up any BS that they want, okay? All right? So that's, the tables were now turned, all right? You had to show, what is it, how is this going to endanger anybody as we're reading this document? Okay, so it was a really revolutionary approach to secret documents. And so the ARB was in business for about 4 years, from about 1994 to 1948. And they declassified 60,000 records and about 2 million pages of documents, okay, including the legendary Lopez Report, the Secret House Select Committee report on Oswald in Mexico City,
right,
which is about 300 pages of text and about 125 pages of footnotes.
Which I know is key, because from previous conversations with you, the Warren Commission didn't have access to a lot of that information about whether Oswald was in Mexico City or not. Had they, that would have changed perhaps the entire trajectory of their investigation.
It would have changed everything. It would have changed everything, okay? Because the Lopez Report, which we is mostly about 98% declassified now, okay, they make a very, very telling argument, okay, that there's a distinct possibility that, A, Oswald didn't go to Mexico City, or if he did, he didn't do the things that the Warren Commission said he did, all right? Okay, and by the way, you know, I think, you know, that's a good segue into your opening comments here, okay? That figure you used is probably incorrect, because I've talked to a couple of experts in the Freedom of Information Act, and they say that it's actually more. It's more like 3,550 records, okay, that are still being withheld, all right? And this list you referred to, let me, if you're interested in this list, go to ctka.net. That's the website I maintain on the JFK case. Go to the news section, scroll down, and you'll see a news item about these new documents being withheld. Click that, then click through, and you'll see the list. There is no way in the world that that list has 3,500 documents on it. At the very most, it has maybe 2,200 documents on it. So, and by the way, and a lot of them, like you said, they don't even have a topic heading on it. They don't have a topic heading. It just says, from this person to this person, but it doesn't tell you what the document's about. All right. Some of them are. Some of them say, still say to this day, withheld. Okay. Now, let me explain why that shouldn't be the case. At the end of the ARB in 1998, there was a big meeting between all the heads of the agencies and the ARB, the Assassination Record Review Board. They made the agencies sign a agreement. Okay. If we are still withholding some documents because of certain clauses in the act that say we cannot endanger an agent in place, we cannot endanger any ongoing operations, okay, you know, or things like that, okay? All right, and so everybody made their, okay, this is what we want to withhold based on those grounds, okay? Now, obviously, they lied, because a lot of these documents okay, do not seem to me to be qualified for that, you know, that reservation.
But also, right, more importantly, Jim, I mean, what agent would still be active 55 years later, and what operation would still be active?
Not today, but back then it was possible.
In 98.
You'd have an agent in place for like, you know, 30 years. Yeah, there's some people still stationed in certain places, you know, that, you know.
Okay, I suppose, that's fair.
They'd still be working, yeah. Okay. Now, today, of course, that can't possibly apply. Okay, you're going to tell me you had a guy in place for 52 years in the sample? Give me a break. All right. Okay, so so now the agreement was that in 2017, everything that you had that we agreed to delay will now finally be declassified. Okay? So what kind of agreement is that? Think about that for a while. You know, we have to wait, what is it, 60 years? You know, or whatever, you know, almost 60 years to find out every last bit of information about the Kennedy assassination. But that's what the agreement was, all right? So now everything is supposed to be in place, okay, and everything is supposed to be organized, okay, and everything is supposed to be declassified next year, okay? Well, guess what? None of that's happening. If you go to that list I talked about and you take a look at it, there's no index to that list. There's no proper organization to the list. There's no guide to that list. And all those are in the law, you know, in the agreement that was signed.
All right, so when they dump this, it's going to be left to people like you to sift through that and find out whether there's anything new there.
Well, because of shows like yours, I hope that's not the case, because that's breaking the law, okay?
How so?
Because, like I said, in the agreement, okay, it said the National Archives was supposed to provide an index, it was supposed to provide proper headings, it was supposed to provide a reader's guide to everything that's going to be declassified next year. They don't even have the proper headings on the list. I swear to God, half of those records don't even have a heading, so you don't even know what the heck it's about. Okay? So you wouldn't even know what you were looking for. Okay? See, that's how arrogant these people are. You see, they couldn't do that with the ARB because the ARB had the document in their hands.
Well, they're digging in their heels to the very end, obviously.
Right,
I mean, it almost seems
obviously
to be
that's what they're doing.
Yeah, it seems to be the default position of a government agency just to hold on to secrets, and it doesn't seem to matter, you know, what the reason is. That's their default position, you know. We're not going to divulge. But when we come back, and we're coming up on a break, we can start the conversation now and continue later, but maybe you can give us a snapshot of what you understand is still being hidden from the public about certain key figures and probes and other events, like Oswald you mentioned the trip to Mexico City. There's also perhaps some information there about J. Edgar Hoover, James Jesus Angleton, Frank Sturgis, no doubt, will pop up in some of those documents, maybe David Attlee Phillips, Regis Kennedy, and others. But, I mean, I know that there's some work to be done here, but are you excited by this prospect that next year you're going to have another dump of documents I mean, how do you feel about it?
Well, of course, finally to get all this final stuff out there is a good thing, all right? But I want, you know, and some of this stuff that we're going to talk about looks very interesting, okay? You know, but I just want to be sure that we actually do get everything, okay, and we do get a proper accounting, all right? Because we've waited much too long, you know, to get screwed at the end.
But right. is it possible that this dump of 3,500 documents or whatever it is a cover and there is still something being held back that we'll never see?
Well, you know, that's always a possibility. That's always a possibility. But let's put it this way, in the famous words of Donald Rumsfeld, okay. This is all that we do know right now. Okay, we don't know what we don't know. Okay, but this is the infinite universe that we have in our hands right now. But as you suggest, it will not surprise me at all. You know, if there's stuff like, for instance, there's a set of ONI records, Office of Naval Intelligence, that we know was withheld, and guess what? It's not on this list.
All right, we'll find out what else is not on this list, but what is on this list? James DiEugenio, JFK assassination researcher. Back with more of Coast to Coast AM, coming to you live from Toronto. My name is Richard Serrett. Stay with us. All right, Castles Made of Sand from Jimi Hendrix. This is a song we don't hear enough of on mainstream radio. We are talking with James DiEugenio, one of the preeminent JFK assassination researchers. And if you want to check out his website, it's Citizens for Truth About the Kennedy Assassination, or ctka.net. All sorts of incredible information there, including some articles pertaining to the latest JFK assassination record dump, some 3,500 records, perhaps as many as 3,500, coming down the pipe in 2017, next year. And the question is, will any of those documents shed any new light on the Kennedy assassination, whether or not Oswald acted alone, and perhaps some new light on any of the shadowy figures that may be behind the trigger man or men, as the case may be. So we'll get to back to that conversation here in mere moments. Just let me ask you this. Are you a Coast Insider yet? And if not, why not? As a Coast Insider, get this. You can listen to the show live or on demand with your computer or mobile device. Take it with you wherever you go. All audio streams are delivered in high-quality, crystal-clear audio. You can listen to the last 5 years of audio archives on the coasttocoastam.com website, audio streaming, downloadable MP3s of show archives. You can chat with hosts and special guests. You get the iTunes podcast, of course, and you can direct email to George Norrie himself. All this for less than, get this, 18 cents a day. Seriously. I mean, I lose 18 cents every day between the seat cushions on my sofa. If you or someone you know is a fan of Coast to Coast, you owe it to yourself to become a Coast Insider. Just go to coasttocoastam.com and register right now. You won't regret it. Back to my conversation with JFK assassination researcher James DiEugenio when Coast to Coast AM continues right after this. Welcome back to Coast AM. Richard Serrett coming to you from Coast's Toronto affiliate talk radio AM 640. Coming up at the top of the hour, documentary filmmaker Ali Siadatan, UFOs, Gods, and Angels. And does the modern-day UFO, ET, alien abduction phenomena, do they fall within the scope of biblical prophecy? We'll discuss. Right now, James DiEugenio is with us, JFK assassination researcher, and we're discussing some 3,500 documents, by some accounts, that will be made available, finally, to the public next year. More than five decades after the assassination of President John F. Kennedy. This was released a couple of weeks ago, or announced by the National Archives. And James, one of the things that jumped out at me when I looked at this list of documents that was to be released was these secret CIA personality studies of Oswald. What can you tell us about those?
Yeah, that's a very, very interesting aspect on the list. Okay, what that means is that there is still stuff left in Oswald's 201 file that even the ARB did not get. Now, this has been an ongoing lie from the CIA, okay, ever since the 1990s, because then Director Robert Gates, during the ARB hearings, brought up a folder with something like 37 documents in them. Okay, many of them were newspaper articles saying, this is all the CIA has on Oswald, meaning there wasn't anything there. Well, as we have found out, that was not all the CIA had on Oswald. And John Newman wrote a book based on these new documents called Oswald and the CIA. And now we find out that there's literally dozens and dozens of Oswald's 201 file still not declassified yet. Let me explain what a 201 file is. All right. A 201 file, as you said, sometimes called a personality file, is supposed to be opened whenever there is some kind of interest in some kind of subject, okay, to the Central Intelligence Agency. Well, obviously, when Oswald defected to Russia, you would think he would have been a person of interest to the CIA, right?
One would think, yes.
Yeah, any idiot would know that, right? Well, guess what? His 201 file was not opened at that time. Let me say that again. This guy defects from the United States to Russia at pretty much the height of the Cold War, all right? He arrives in Russia, okay, and he's transferred to Minsk, and he starts going out with a Russian lady who's a niece to an NKVD, which is sort of like the FBI in Russia, all right? And the CIA doesn't open up a 201 file on him.
He just left Atsugi Air Force Base, which is, you know, right, the home of the U-2 spy plane.
Right. Okay. All right. Now, they don't open up a 201 file on Oswald for 1 year after he had left for Russia. Okay. When the House Select Committee asked Richard Helms about this, the CIA director, they said, why did the CIA not open up a 201 file on Oswald until a year after he defected? And Helms put on his great, you know, his great performance there, saying, "Oh, is that true? That's amazing." Yeah, no kidding, Dick. All right.
Right.
So now,
feigned astonishment.
Right. Now we find out that they're still holding back stuff out of that 201 file, and I'm not kidding. This is probably I went through the list twice. That is probably the single most common title in the whole list, Oswald's 201 file, okay? Now, the second thing that was the most common, because this is another lie I want to talk about, okay? The National Archives has said for years, okay, that they didn't have anything left from the Warren Commission, okay? I'm talking years they said this, back in the 90s, okay? Well, guess what? They still do have stuff from the Warren Commission. There must be at least 25 documents on that list. Okay, still from the, and now remember, the Warren Commission closed shop in 1964. Okay, 1964. And they're still having declassified all the stuff that the Warren Commission did. All right, and by the way, let me say there's a very, very interesting title in this. It looks like, from the title on one of these documents, that the National Archives was letting members of the Warren Commission into the archives and doing a status report on what they had and what had been declassified. Because that's what it looks like. It says working project, and then it has a Warren Commission guy like David Slauson on the title. Okay, 1985. Why would he be there in 1985 when the Warren Commission had closed shop 21 years earlier?
Right, okay? Right. It's very odd. But can I ask you something, Jim? If let's imagine for a moment that Oswald was a CIA asset that was deliberately, I mean, there was a program, a defector program going on, sending agents into the Soviet Union. Let's suppose the CIA had picked Oswald. He was being groomed by the CIA from before maybe he was even at Atsugi. Would there not then be a document, a CIA personality study of Oswald prior to 1959 to make sure he was the right candidate?
Yes, there should be. There should be. Well, but the only problem with that, Richard, okay, is that, first of all, in most people who study Oswald, like me, think that he was being groomed for that CIA project by the Office of Naval Intelligence. Okay, and like I said,
okay,
there's no ONI documents on this list, even though we know there were ONI documents, because as a couple of reporters like Bill Kelly pointed out, the woman who was collecting the documents for the Navy Department got fired when she started to put together an index of the stuff they had on the Kennedy assassination. All right, so we might not have those. Secondly, most people, including myself again, think that Oswald's ultimate controller in the CIA, once he got transferred over, was James Angleton. The problem with that is that James Angleton had his own filing system.
His own filing system. All right.
Yeah, he did, if you can believe that. Yeah. Yeah, he did. That's how powerful he was within the agency. Okay. All right. When they finally fired him, they had to go in and try and find, because he had all these safes. Okay. You know, and they had to look through this stuff. And then after Wynn Scott, the director of the Mexico City station, okay, at the time Oswald was supposed to be down there, when he died, okay, you know that story, don't you? Angleton got on a jet plane, went down to Mexico City, told his wife, unless you let me into this house, we're going to take away all your benefits from Wynn's policies with the CIA, okay? So he went into her house, walked into his safe, and took all the stuff Wynn Scott had on Oswald in Mexico City. All right.
Wow. Wow.
Okay. So that's how powerful these people are.
I mean, didn't a lot of the Angleton stuff come out during the church committee? I mean, because he was asked to testify before the church committee, wasn't he? Isn't that how they found out about the CIA recruiting members of the mob for certain covert activities?
Oh, no. They actually found out about that. Not through Angleton, but they had access to the Inspector General report, that is the internal report by the CIA in 1967 done for Johnson, okay, about the CIA and the mafia, okay. Angleton wasn't a major figure in that. Now, but I would like to say that there is, on this list, there's an interview with the House Select Committee by James Angleton, okay. Now, let me ask you this. Why did we have to wait almost 60 years? You know, why did that have to be maintained secret, rather 30 years? What? James Angleton died many, many years ago. Why do we have to wait until 2017 to read that interview? This really infuriates me. It should infuriate everybody. Okay?
They want to make sure that not only was Angleton dead, but everybody Angleton may have talked to.
Right. They want every single person who's involved in this thing dead, okay, so they can, you know, so they can finally clear the earth, you know, of any controversy about it. They can just say, well, he's dead anyway.
Okay. Let me ask you about Hoover. Let me ask you about Hoover, because supposedly in this cache of documents to be released is one document titled, Reaction of Soviet and Communist Party Officials to JFK Assassination. And this is something Hoover did, to Johnson, President Johnson, a week after the assassination. And what do you suppose might be, what are you looking for in that document?
Well, Hoover had agents inside all those leftist groups, okay? You know, and so I think what he was probably looking for is any possible indication he could get that somehow they had knowledge of it, and he could somehow then blame it, you know, somehow in some way on the left, okay? You know, because obviously Oswald was posing as a communist. But the problem is, of course, that, you know, Oswald really wasn't a communist. So Hoover was probably searching for stuff that he could throw in there, you know, that he could confuse things with, all right?
What about KGB agent Yuri Nazenko?
Oh, that's very interesting, because I noticed there's about three things there about Yuri Nesenko. Should I explain who Yuri Nesenko was?
Yeah, he was a KGB officer, and he defected from the Soviet Union.
Right. He defected to the United States in 1964, and one of the things that he said is that the KGB never tried to really seriously recruit Oswald when he was in the Soviet Union. Well, James Angleton didn't like that, so he essentially imprisoned him for about 3 years. You know, tortured him, and both mentally and physically, okay, and tried to break him because he thought he was lying, okay? Well, it turned out that all the evidence says that he wasn't lying. He was actually telling the truth. And we now have files from Russia which prove that point, okay? In this document thing, this is really something. I don't know how they got this stuff. They got the two opposing reports. There was one done for Angleton by a guy named Bagley, okay, who was an Angleton clone, okay, saying that Nesenko was a plant. And then they got the Hart report done under Bill Colby after Colby fired Angleton, okay, all right, okay, which said he wasn't. Those are both listed here. I can't wait to read those things. Very, very interesting. I mean, come on. That is a tremendous, controversy. We're finally going to actually get to see those reports. They're referred to all the time, but nobody's actually read them.
Okay. Well, here's something else interesting. Speaking of Hoover, and these are the memos that were sent to J. Lee Rankin, who was the general counsel to the Warren Commission, about Jack Ruby. These were sent 2 days after the assassination. What are you hoping to find in these documents from Hoover to Rankin about Jack Ruby?
Well, first of all, why were they classified for all these years? That's a very good question. Now, I would probably think, that Ruby was trying to get, as much information about Ruby's background as he possibly could. Okay, his informants on the ground in Dallas, trying to find out, did Ruby talk to anybody? Okay, did Ruby have some mysterious phone calls? Okay, which it turned out he did. Okay, did anybody put him up to this? Or just did he do it by himself? Okay, see, that's 2 days after the assassination. That's the day Ruby shot him. Okay, so these are going to be the very first reports that the FBI got on Ruby. So that should be pretty, pretty interesting. And of course, there's also Regis Kennedy, who you mentioned in your lead up to the show. Regis Kennedy was the FBI agent in New Orleans.
Right. No relation to the president.
Right. Right. But he spoke fluent Spanish. So he was Hoover's guy with the Cuban exiles in New Orleans. But he was also very good friends with Guy Bannister. Okay. I think everybody knows who Guy Bannister was. He was the guy that Oswald worked out of his office in the summer of 1963.
Right, the same building in New Orleans.
Right, 544 Camp Street.
Right.
Well, Kennedy was very, very close to Guy Bannister. And at the trial of Clay Shaw, Garrison, in the hearings leading up to the trial, Garrison subpoenaed him. Okay, and wanted to interview him about what he was doing in the 2 days after the assassination, what his investigation consisted of. You know what happened? They stopped the hearing. They called Washington, D.C. They got on the phone with Attorney General John Mitchell. Garrison's DA, assistant DA, had to get on the phone with him, and they said you could only ask him two questions. Okay, can only ask him. There's no follow-up
two.
On him. Okay, all right. And you know what the questions were? Okay, were you investigating Clay Bertrand, okay, after the assassination of Kennedy as part of your overall inquiry? And he said yes. Okay, and then the second question is, okay, did you actually start investigating him within those 48 hours? Okay, and he said yes. And that's all he could have asked. That's all he could ask him.
All right, a couple of quick questions. We have about a minute here. There are some in these documents coming down the pipe in 2017. There are some communications between Jacqueline Kennedy and Johnson. Are you excited about what might be?
No, it's not actually Jacqueline Kennedy and Johnson. It's Jacqueline Kennedy and Rich and Manchester, William Manchester. That's the guy who wrote the book. Okay. The death of a president. Those tapes, I'm glad you brought this up. Those tapes, no one has been able to listen to those tapes for 50 some years. They supposedly were classified that she didn't want anybody to hear them because she said some very derogatory things about Johnson that she did not want in the book. So Manchester kept them secret. I don't know, really, beyond perfectly honest, I don't know how the ARB got those. Okay, but they did.
Well, they did. And listen, it's going to be up to people like you, Jim, to do the heavy lifting because, as you say, they're not going to properly, categorize these documents. You're going to have to wade through 3,500 documents and separate the wheat from the chaff, but I know you're up to it. We should also point out your book, Destiny Betrayed, written in 1992, but recently updated. It's practically a whole new book. After these documents come out, you may have to do a third edition, Jim.
Revision, right? And don't forget Reclaiming Parkland. Okay,
absolutely.
That's
all right.
Most recent book.
CTKA.net, Citizens for Truth about the Kennedy assassination. Thanks so much, Jim. When we come back, Ali Siadatan, UFOs, Gods, and Angels, right here on Coast to Coast AM.